As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell. I did not attempt to pronounce anything in German for the introduction to this episode, but we are going to be talking about a lot of things Bundesliga, because joining me is our resident Bundesliga expert, Mr. Manuel Veit of Gegenpressing fame, the Gegenpressing Bundesliga podcast, as well as Transfermarkt. Manuel, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me back. It's been way too long.
We were talking about this before we started recording. Normally, we have you on like somewhat regularly, but between the World Cup and then the Bundesliga break, it has been way too long. Yeah. And it's always interesting because if we did this show a week or two ago, we would be having, say, a very different conversation about Bayern Munich as opposed to the one we're going to be having here shortly. So things change really quickly. But again, I appreciate you taking the time, especially since you are quite busy yourself between Transfermarkt and Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast, going full time. Congrats on that, my friend.
Yeah, full time. Well, it's not just me. It's Stefan Bienkowski too, who's been a trooper and is currently holding up the fort at Transfermarkt, watching some Premier League game.
Is that how you treat the English game? Some Premier League game. It doesn't matter. It's not the Bundesliga, so no, I don't care.
It doesn't matter in this context.
I see. Wait, in which game do you think it is that he's watching? Because it might matter, but probably not, I suppose. Probably not.
It's some team called United. I don't know.
I think I've heard of them. I've heard they're maybe good. We'll see if they end up playing Union Berlin in the Europa League. Hopefully.
They might.
Yeah. Hopefully they will. And we will be talking about Union Berlin here shortly. But again, I wanted to just say that if you have never heard Gegenpressing, I keep saying the full name because there are two Gegenpressing podcasts, I believe, one of which is in German. So you'll know right away if you don't speak German that that's not the one for you. But the Bundesliga podcast, there aren't that many or many at all English language, German football centric podcasts. And yours is one that always does a great job of sort of getting to the major narratives of the day, but also getting into the tactics and how the games actually went. It's pretty clear that you all actually watch games and then have informed thoughts from those games, which isn't always the case with some shows. So just wanted to plug it one more time as being a really great show. Hopefully you're still enjoying doing it.
No, it's been great. We've upped the coverage. We've gone two full shows that are available for free for everyone. That's the main show and the preview show. The previous show, I have to say, we do an association with Get German Football News. So shout out to them for always giving us a plug. But yeah, so those two shows are available for free. And then we have two extra shows that we have behind the Substack paywall, which I think, you know, Substack has been such a fantastic tool for writers who want to cover topics that are not maybe as big mainstream, but still want to monetize it, right? Because it is such a, You don't necessarily need to do the kind of content that you get thousands and thousands of clicks for. You can essentially just write something more in depth and thoughtful. And because you're not reliant on a huge reach, but just on the people that are subscribing to what you write anyways or produce in terms of podcasts, it gives you a lot more freedom and creativity. And yeah, it's been great. I mean, I want to say our subscribers are the best because it's an ever-growing community, and they're very engaged. You know, if you haven't found it already, we actually, you know, Substack is fantastic because it has a chat function too, so we can actually stay in touch with the people that are subscribing and get feedback pretty much right away. And unlike Twitter, it's not a cesspool, so people.
That's always a positive.
Yeah, it's been really great in that regard. So. Yeah, no, nice. It's been great, and it's been a fantastic experience for us. You know, it allowed us to now have 4 podcasts a week. Both of us do at least 1 written article a week, and that's a full feature. Like, it's not just some short. Here is player A going to player to club B. It's like a full on thought piece every time. And when time allows it, or we go to a major game, we usually do then a thoughts piece on the game that we attended to as well. That's not guaranteed content, but it's extra content when we have the time, right? So yeah, it's been awesome. Really, really awesome. And if you want to check it out, it's, you know, you can find it on my Twitter, or it's just go on the Substack and find Gegenpressing. And on Substack, there is no German version. We're the only ones.
There we go. All right. So you're the only one there. That makes things a little more clear. If you are on the fence, if you haven't yet subscribed or joined the Substack, then maybe you can use this as your introduction to mm-hmm. Manuel and the show they do, because Manuel brings the knowledge when it comes to many things, but the Bundesliga specifically today. And let's get into that for a moment. Bayern Munich this weekend reminding everyone that they're Bayern Munich with a 3-0 win over Union Berlin. I want to start with that game, but specifically Union Berlin first. I think many people were inclined to say, and I think I would put myself in this category when I saw the result of, like, well, that's that. They're done with the title challenge. But it sounds like they might very well end up falling back, but it does also sound like maybe we could say the result owes at least somewhat to their fixture congestion this season.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think Bayern Munich were really quick to admit to that as well, right? Julian Nagelsmann saying after the game that if they hadn't played midweek against Ajax, this would have been a very different fixture for Union Berlin. And I think the game against Ajax highlighted why Union Berlin, maybe at full fitness, could have been a lot more dangerous to Bayern Munich, right? Because Ajax and Bayern Munich play a very similar style of football. Of course, it's, you know, there's some small differences, especially since Nagelsmann has taken over, but they like to have the ball. They sit really high. They control possession. They play a lot of passes, you know, sort of all the football that Ajax play. And I mean, there is that connection, you know, modern Bayern Munich was essentially invented by Louis van Gaal, right? Former Ajax coach. So I think in a lot of ways, when I watched the Ajax game, and Union smashed Ajax, right? Well, defeated Ajax 3-1. They didn't smash them. They basically did what they always do, give them the ball and then just hit them where it hurts. And I thought, okay, well, if they play like that against Bayern, they will have a pretty good chance. But I completely forgot that how taxing their style of game is, right? And, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Union Berlin deal with this whole Europa League run. I think that is going to be something fascinating to watch, right? Because the deeper they go into the Europa League, the more games they will have. And are they going to come at some point to a conclusion that it's going to be one or the other? They can't do both, right? And yeah, that's always an interesting one to watch. I don't think Union Berlin is quite done yet. We had that before that we thought, okay, now they're out of the title race, and then they closed the gap to Bayern Munich. And we'll see if this narrative is going to repeat itself, right? Where Union Berlin are seemingly, okay, well, we lost this game. We're 3 points behind now. Let's forget it. Because I think there's another spell in Bayern Munich where they're going to drop points if they're going to capitalize it from it then.
I did not realize the amount that Union are okay with not having the ball. I saw the scoreline for the Ajax game. I thought that was pretty impressive. I saw the goals. I did not see that Ajax completed 600 passes to Union's 156. Ajax was 73% of possession. Is that, maybe not to that degree, but is that standard for the way Union want to play, the way they want these games to play out against stronger opposition?
Yeah, 100%. You know, they're quite happy with giving the opponent the ball and say, here, do your thing. And then when we get it, we're going to quickly hit it forward, and we're going to break you down. And when we have you know, the XG, everyone has been hammering on the XG and how low it is. But the truth also is that they're extremely efficient when it comes to converting their chances. And they have been all season. And I mean, they now have been outperforming the XG for a good 23 games and all the Europa League games, right? So at some point you look at the XG model and say, well, maybe this is by design. And it's working. Urs Fischer has come up with a design, and that is essentially kind of everyone in the Bundesliga plays for gegenpressing, right? It produces this wonderful style of football. It produces a ton of goals. Stefan always jokes, my colleague Stefan Biankowski always jokes that no one in Germany can defend. And there's some truth in that, right? No one can defend, but Union Berlin can. And I think that is sort of how they decoded the Bundesliga a little bit, that unlike everyone else, they actually know how to defend. And they use that ability to defend to essentially sit very deep and then play this taxing style of attacking football, that when they win the ball, go quickly forward and then also do capitalize from their chances. And yeah, I think this is the start. The Ajax game was essentially the blueprint. And I think they would have loved to use that blueprint against Bayern Munich, but it just wasn't there. I think the energy level wasn't there. They don't have the depth in the squad to play this kind of style twice in 1 week. And I think it just showed.
The idea that no one in the Bundesliga can defend, can we spend some time on that one? Because that's
sure.
An idea that I knew existed and is something that's often said about, say, the Dutch league. Mm-hmm. Didn't know it was quite a thing when it comes to the Bundesliga.
We have this argument, not just on the podcast, but
I can
also
tell you're thrilled to talk about it based on that series of size
on our gegenpressing WhatsApp chat. That's a secret chat that a few other writers are on as well. And my counter argument is that nowadays almost nobody can defend anymore, because I think the game has never been as fast as it is now. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of teams rely on very, very fast players, and it is so much easier now to overrun a defensive line, right? So I think what German teams have done, and I think you see it in other leagues too, the Premier League, for example, although you have more Union Berlins than you have in the Bundesliga, I would argue, in the Premier League. But I think what's going on is that a lot of teams rely on speed, right? And sort of the kind of countermeasure to players becoming faster and faster is teams employing fast defenders. One great example is Bayern Munich with Alfonso Davies, right? Sort of making up for these defensive weaknesses that a lot of these teams have, or by sitting up very high, by playing defenders that are also sitting, that are sitting very high, but are also very fast. So I just think that this typical, and in hockey, they have this great term, a stay-at-home defender. I think that kind of is doesn't exist at the moment in German football as much as it does maybe in other leagues, except for Union Berlin, who quite happily do it, right? They've yeah. almost kind of gone the opposite way, that they try to not even have, sit very deep and then quickly go through midfield straight into the attack. And yeah, that's sort of a brand of football that is very different than what you see with a lot of other teams. What you do see is that some other teams in the bottom of the table are catching on to it. And I will think it's interesting that, you know, it used to be in German football that if you were in trouble, you would try to get out of trouble by playing good football. What you're seeing though now is Schalke is a recent example. Schalke is a team on the up, right? They sort of have copied what Union Berlin have done, and they've done it to great success against Union Berlin in that goddamn awful 0-0 draw that we all had to witness 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I guess it's now almost. So I think it's almost like a style that is catching on a little bit. And I wonder too, if this is like a trend where you will see more German teams coming up with more different styles, maybe sort of kind of getting rid of what our podcast is named after, gegenpressing, right?
Will you change the name of the podcast then to Defensive Solidarity or something?
No, we will not.
I was going to go to Bayern, but actually, since you brought up Schalke, they're in 18th place right now on 16 points. Bochum, one place ahead with 19. Hoffenheim, Stuttgart, same number of points, better goal differences. And then there's Hertha in 14th with 20 points. So it sounds to me, it seems to me like those are the five teams that maybe will be battling for relegation. Do you feel like all of them are capable of making those sort of adjustments to be more defensive, to be more sound the way Schalke have? Or do you think a few of those teams will sort of find their way to the rock bottom part of the table?
Well, it's a difficult thing to do. I mean, you see Bochum do it quite a bit too, right? Schalke is a great example, and Schalke are very much on the up. But then you have Stuttgart, who have the Bruno Labbadia, the head coach, has gone to great length to point this out. I mean, he is right. They have the youngest team in the Bundesliga. And the question is then, with a young squad like that, are you able to play this kind of style, especially if your team has been put together to play a attractive style of football or attacking style of football? And especially if you're from the city that... is the home of the head coach that has spawned the idea of gegenpressing or made it a common term, right? Jürgen Klopp is from Stuttgart. Ralf Rangnick is from that area as well. A lot of the coaches in German football that have sort of created the style of play are from that area. So I wonder if Stuttgart have it even in their DNA. Because if you're relying on a lot of young players, then it's kind of difficult to... If your recruitment process for many years has been to play attractive attacking style football, it's very hard to then switch, right? So I can see them, and I'm reprojecting them to be in a lot of trouble going into the relegation battle. While we kind of feel like that Schalke maybe can actually maybe fight their way out of it, even though they are currently last, their trend is their friend. You know, three times 0-0 draws, where they kind of laid the foundation for that defensive strength, and then they won the game against Stuttgart, which is a 6-pointer, right? And so that's now four games in a row where they have collected points. And if you're collecting points in a relegation battle, you don't necessarily need to win all these games. You know, you only need to win every once in a while. But if you're not conceding, you're in a really good place. And I actually kind of feel that Schalke is probably going to work their way out of that. And I can see sort of the same with Bochum, and then you have the likes of Stuttgart and Hoffenheim, who could be in real trouble.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu. Hoffenheim very much conceding goals of late. Yeah. Winless in their last five, all of those would be losses. Some fairly sizable. My question, as always, is coming from an American interest. Pellegrino Matarazzo taking over there. Mm. How much do you think he's going to regret that decision? How much pressure do you think he's under to stay up this season? Or if he goes down, do you think they will stick with him and sort of build around him?
Wow, that's a really good question.
I always like to get those in early. Anytime I get Manuel saying that was a good question early on, I'm always pleased. Although sometimes that means I've just asked a very long and meandering one that requires a lot of thought.
So Pellegrino Matarazzo has a past with Hoffenheim, right? He worked under Julian Nagelsmann there and was in the academy as well. We worked there with Nagelsmann too. And then they kind of sort of went their separate ways. Nagelsmann, of course, heading first to Leipzig and Bayern, and Pellegrino Matarazzo heading to Stuttgart. And for Matarazzo, this is a return to sort of the club where his coaching career really took off. And I think that he made this decision with a lot of thought in mind, and also knowing that there is an environment for him there to succeed. And I think too, with that in mind, I can't see both sides agreeing to this comeback, right? Him coming back and Hoffenheim taking him back, without there being a long-term plan in place. So I would be surprised if Materazzo is going to be let go if he gets relegated. Having said all that, I know that although we have this understanding and thought that Hoffenheim is this club that kind of plans things years in ahead, Dietmar Hopp, the investor owner, right? Although he's now announced today that he's going to give back his shares and return the club to 50+1. SAP, the company that he founded, the software technology company, right, still has a huge say in the club and the way that the club has been structured and put together. And so we have this sort of thought that Hoffenheim is this technology hub, does things different, think tank kind of club. The way it was set up under Ralf Rangnick. When the reality is there too, that there is certain things that are going on there that kind of makes me think, okay, well, that's kind of weird and odd. That's the sort of thing that traditional clubs have in German football. It's been suggested to me, and I'm going to put a lot of caveats on this and maybes and ifs and buts and supposedly, because we don't want to get sued, but that a big German agent has a separate budget there to sign his own players. And this agent may or may not represent a former American national team player in John Anthony Brooks, right? So, and that's the kind of thing where I think, okay, well, that's really weird. Why would you give an agent that sort of power within a club, right? And that's not exactly forward thinking.
Ah, that does make more sense, like, than when you look at some of their roster build and the players mm-hmm. they've brought in. Do you feel like Hoffenheim are one of those clubs that will be in trouble? Like, if you're looking at the teams that maybe finish 17th and 8th, 18th, the automatic relegation spots, who would be your bets to be in those spots at the end of the season right now?
Oh, at the moment, I think, you know, that the teams that we've sort of projecting, it's not looking good for Hertha, although they just won. It's not looking good for Stuttgart. I'm still worried about Hoffenheim as well. And then you're looking at Bochum and Schalke, who've sort of kind of been trending upwards, although Bochum dropped points, right? The bottom two places, that's always so hard because every year is so different. I would actually kind of go with, I would possibly go with Hertha and Hoffenheim there, to be honest. And then maybe Stuttgart in the relegation playoffs. I could see Bochum and Schalke working their way out.
Augsburg, it seems to be then, would be safe. Currently, they're 13th on 24 points, but they're not scoring a ton of goals. I think they're near the bottom in terms of goals scored. What I'm hearing is that they need Ricardo Pepi back and scoring a bunch of goals for them. That should solve all the problems, right? Thank you for your polite laugh at that one.
It's, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, that's the plan, even though maybe the different parties involved in this plan have different thoughts and ideas of how this is going to go. I can only say what I've been told. That is that Hoffenheim absolutely want the player back. So, you know, there's been certain reports out there by other journalists, and I don't want to discredit them because I know that usually their sources are very strong, and I can only suggest that they've been told something from a different party involved in this, right? And I think those who are listening to the podcast can kind of put one and one together and understand where the different parties are. Augsburg definitely want Ricardo Pepi back when his loan expires at Groningen. And they are going to reinsert him in the squad, and they want to see what he can do at the Bundesliga level. That is their plan. I understand that maybe the plan at the Pepi side is different. Whether there's going to be some sort of resolution to this, we'll have to see, I guess, next year. But you have to also understand, like, scoring a lot of goals in the Netherlands doesn't necessarily translate right away into scoring a lot of goals in the Bundesliga or any of the top four leagues, right? We see this all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he does really well there. I think it's been a really good move, and Augsburg have pointed out that this has been a really good move for all parties involved. But we'll have to actually wait and see whether it actually translates into him scoring maybe 10, 12, 13 goals next year in Germany for Augsburg, right? So yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of water down the Isar, as we say in Munich, until we get some sort of understanding, clarity of what's actually going to happen there.
I have been told by a reliable source, though, that no one in the Bundesliga can defend all that well either. So maybe it won't be that harsh of a transition back from the Netherlands to the Bundesliga.
Well, although we've had no changes, you know, if Union Berlin forces four or five other teams in the Bundesliga to play different football, then that's
we got to start defending. I don't like that. I don't like that.
No one likes that. It's the highest scoring league in Europe. We want goals, right?
Indeed, we do. Well, speaking of scoring goals, let's talk Bayern then. Bayern Munich with the win, as I said in the beginning. Nagelsmann reverting back to a 4-2-3-1 in that one. Seemed to get the best out of his squad. Much has been made of his usage of Thomas Müller in that game. He put him back in a spot where he's more comfortable, and it showed. This is a very broad question to start the Bayern Munich conversation, but I'm interested in your thoughts on how this season has been for Julian Nagelsmann. Because, as I said, if we recorded this a week ago, the conversation is all about how he couldn't control his temper and how he was like trying to misdirect the media, but it ended up like landing on criticism of him and his approach. And there's rumblings about discontent in the locker room. So at the same time, they're still challenging on multiple fronts. They still look like a very good team. They won this weekend with an insane number of players on the bench. Their depth is ridiculous. So that's a positive and a negative. And I end up just wondering sort of what you've seen from him, what you make of this season for Julian Nagelsmann so far.
Well, I think it's been difficult for him and everyone involved. You know, I just come back from Munich and I was there when they beat Bochum, and it wasn't the most convincing result. I mean, it was a convincing result, but not a convincing performance. Let me rephrase that. I think what's going on with Nagelsmann and Bayern is that it's not the easiest relationship, to put it that way. And I think as long as he wins games, no one is going to care about all these things that are going on and the way he's perceived in and around the club. I mean, Julian Nagelsmann is still very young, right? He's 35, I believe, now. And so he's at an age where he's not much older than many of the players. And he's come in with a very different kind of mentality, and not maybe the statesman-like character that you usually see with Bayern Munich coaches, whether it's Pep Guardiola, Carlo Ancelotti, Jupp Heynckes, go further back, Ottmar Hitzfeld, or Louis van Gaal, we already mentioned on this podcast, right? We're all kind of senior personalities with a lot of experience. And you don't really have that with Julian Nagelsmann. And I think he still kind of finding his way in and around the club and having to deal with all these other big personalities that are there, whether it's Oliver Kahn, the CEO, right? Whether it's the director of sport, Hasan Salihamidzic. These are all very big personalities that have won a lot of things as players. Julian Nagelsmann was never a successful player. He tore his ACL while playing for 1860s Munich's academy, right? And never had a playing career. So it's, I think he's found this taxing, and he found this difficult sort of trying to insert his personality. And he often comes across as maybe slightly arrogant and pushy. And then Bayern Munich have found that difficult because he sometimes says things that he thinks because he's still in his 30s. And I guess both of us are still in our 30s, right? We sometimes say things that we think, and we don't have that seniority yet to understand to sometimes be quiet. and I think that is something that they found difficult. And then also I think he's very demanding towards the players that in his coaching sessions and the way he's worked at Hoffenheim and then Leipzig, you know, Bundesliga has always made a big deal of showing the way his coaching sessions worked and putting everything on a big screen. The fact that he never runs a coaching session twice, right? He never repeats any coaching session. I think all of that has been something that the players like, but also find demanding. And then, of course, you have a bunch of guys in the dressing room that have won pretty much everything. And he has to kind of insert his personality there. I mean, a good example is the whole situation with Manuel Neuer and the interview and the fact that, you know, that he was so upset that they fired his goalkeeper coach. Essentially, the moment Manuel Neuer was out with an injury, Julian Nagelsmann went and replaced Toni Topalovic, the goalkeeper coach, with a goalkeeper coach that he wanted, right, as part of his coaching staff. And those are the sort of things I think that he's trying to insert himself on the club, but there's a lot of pressure from the bosses, but also the players to sort of, you know, because it's a shark tank, and to sort of always test him. And I think that is why you see so many difficulties. Now you have a week of peace because they won and they have a week off, which is great. But they might as well, they could draw next week and we're starting this entire debate all over again, right? While they're also in a situation where they can't really fire him because they paid 25 million euros to sign him from Leipzig.
Yeah, which is a fair amount of cash splash. Then again, whenever they bring people over from Leipzig, it doesn't always mean that they're going to play them a lot or that that's going to go well. So maybe it's just another person they bring over that doesn't end up working out. Although Marcel Sabitzer has definitely worked out for Manchester United. So thank you for that, Bayern Munich. Staying with Manuel Neuer, though, that one does seem to be more of a big deal in my mind. And as you said, it's because they fire. Neuer insisted on him being the coach when Neuer came over from Schalke. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's his buddy.
Yeah, so this is his buddy. And for people who are new to the game or not as familiar, whereas you'll get like different coaches running different training sessions or doing different things, and maybe this person's in charge of scouting and this person's in charge of set pieces. When it comes to goalkeepers, their training is ridiculous. It is the most intense training, I think, of any position on the pitch by far. And I think with that comes a lot of just day in, day out working with that person. And so you build these bonds, you build this friendship, you build this connection. And it was very strange to me that basically, as soon as Neuer is, at home recovering, that coach is sacked, in comes a new one. It felt to me like Nagelsmann taking the opportunity to prepare for Bayern Munich post-Manuel Neuer. Am I being premature in that one, or maybe how premature am I being in that conclusion?
No, I think that's the right conclusion. I think that's exactly what's happening here. They're reshuffling the board in terms of power structure within the club. And this is Nagelsmann is using this opportunity. And I think it's not just Nagelsmann. I think Hasan Salihamidzic is very much on board with that too.
Is Neuer the first then of several big names you think that will be on the way out? As you said, there's that group of players that have won everything, that have the experience. I feel like Thomas Müller is probably the first name that comes to my mind when thinking about that like group of players. Do you think we'll see some other big names on the way out this summer?
Well, it's a question if it's the summer or if it's maybe a slow process, right? The Neuer thing is really interesting to me because he insists on coming back. The club has been very vocal about him coming back, but he had two metastasal fractures and now he has this broken leg at a very complicated position, right? It's like the lower bones and it's a double fracture, if I'm not mistaken. He's a pretty big guy, 6'5", over 200 pounds. Extremely athletic, but as you said, the goalkeeper position is very difficult. The training sessions are very hard. Goalkeepers work extremely hard during training and then not very much during games. It's kind of like the flip side, right, of the field position, because they have to be ready when the time comes. And I do wonder, you know, with that kind of injury history, and the age that he's approaching now, he's going to be 37. By the time he's going to be fully recovered, he will be 38. And the club must be wondering that too. I think what they're laying the ground for is the eventuality that Neuer does not come back. While they're publicly saying that they're thinking he's going to come back, I think they're laying the groundwork for that what if the leg doesn't hold this, is not able, what if he's not able to replicate playing on this high level, right? And that means that, for example, in the summer, I anticipate that Alexander Nübel will come back from Monaco. And it's been reported that Monaco has now given up signing him, right? Then they have Jan Sommer still there, who's on a long-term contract. Although there is still rumors that they could sell him to Manchester United, you know, sort of earn that money back. But then you have Sommer, Nübel, and Neuer trying to make his way back. And I think it's going to be an open competition. And the reason why they signed a new goalkeeper coach is to sort of ensure that there is actually an open competition for that position so that they have a neutral voice when it comes to assessing the goalkeepers that they have.
St. Louis in Major League Soccer has some open DP spots. I know they've already got Roman Berkey, but could we see Lutz bring in Manuel Neuer and just have two DP goalkeepers? Why not?
No, I don't think so. I think when it comes to that kind of player going to MLS, there's very few markets that they would be interested in going to. And one of these markets cannot sign a player in the summer. So you can figure out who that is.
Who in the galaxy could you possibly be talking about?
Well, both LA teams, right, can't sign anyone in the summer.
Is that true? I knew the Galaxy couldn't.
The Galaxy are not allowed to, and the Galaxy and the LAFC have no spots.
Ah, okay. Okay, there we go. They could if they bought somebody out or paid somebody down, but that seems unlikely.
That seems unlikely. Because like, I have recently spoken, I know that there is a German player with a high profile who is really interesting to go to Galaxy, but this would have been for the summer, so it's not happening. Right. So, yeah, shelf that. Not worth reporting because it's not happening. So, yeah, I don't know. And Lutz, when you look at the way that he's constructed his roster, I know we're going off the record. We're going off tangent here, but I don't think he's interested in that kind of player.
Yeah, that sounds, I mean, based on him saying we're not a team that like values DPs or sees the value in DPs, I would say he would agree with that.
Yeah. I'm there on Saturday for the game, so I can ask him. There.
Interesting. I love Lutz. That guy rules. We've talked about it every single time, and we always will, because he rules. And I hope it goes well for him. They did better than we certainly thought they would on this show in their opener. We'll see if that continues. If it doesn't, then maybe Manuel Neuer, I don't know, gets tricked into thinking that St. Louis is on the West Coast or something. But
Or it's South of Florida.
Or South Florida. Yeah, it seems pretty likely as well as a possible destination. One more question about Bayern, sticking with Nagelsmann. Have you seen him evolve his tactics or evolve his approach such that he could become that sort of elder statesman? Or do you think part of his identity, part of his style is always going to be a bit arrogant, to be a bit hot-headed?
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to change. This is the personality that they got. He is of course, also he is someone who had a lot of success at a very young age, right? And so that gives you, if I had been this successful at that age, I don't think anyone could ever tell me anything.
Yeah, that's fair. he started, 28, was it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're that are successful and wherever you go, you improve the team and you're always on an upwards trajectory. I think a person like that will find it really difficult to be told what to do.
Do you think that ultimately will be why he doesn't stay at Bayern Munich for a long, long, long time? Or do you think that's something that as long as he's winning, they will be happy with that personality?
I mean, there's always that looming threat of a certain Thomas Tuchel being available.
If Hansi Flick were to be sacked by the German FA and they came in for Nagelsmann, could we just keep that going where the Bayern coach becomes the German national team coach and on we go?
No, I think the next German national team coach is currently working for a team that starts with Liver and ends with Pool.
That's what I was wondering. I keep seeing that reported as like there's a lot of discontent with Hansi Flick. Let's just wait until Klopp is available and then we'll make that signing. It feels as though from some of like the German reporting or the German fan perspective that I have seen, it feels like a foregone conclusion, which is surprising to me.
That Klopp is going to take over at some point. I mean, he's said so much, right? Like, he said it. he said that he that that's his goal at some point to win a World Cup. And, you know, the easiest path for him would be to just take over Germany and do it with them.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode. Well, we'll see what continues to go with Bayern and Nagelsmann this season. We would expect them to be very, very much involved in the title race, if not in front for a good stretch of it. But Dortmund will have their say in that one. 7 consecutive league wins. I believe they are undefeated in 2023. Getting results when in seasons past, I think they would have dropped them or found a way to drop them. Based on what you've seen so far, Manuel, do you think they can keep this consistency going for the rest of the campaign? Maybe not necessarily win the title, but do you think we will see Dortmund sort of keep pace with Bayern as opposed to falling off, dropping points and finishing like 7 to 9 points behind Bayern?
But in a really, really important stretch now, right? They've won 9 out of 9 in across all competitions. They now, a big game on Friday against Leipzig. And Leipzig are a title contender as well. You know, I think this game is going to determine. I don't think if one of those two teams loses, the title race is over for that team. Whether Dortmund or Leipzig lose, or if they draw, I think the title race is still very much open because I think Bayern have another spell in them where they're going to drop points. But it is a very decisive few weeks for Dortmund for sure. So first it's Leipzig, then it's Schalke. Then you got Cologne. That's a little bit easier. But then you got Bayern Munich. So you essentially, for the next 4 match days in the Bundesliga, 3 are against either rivals or against title contenders, right? You could even go 1 match day further, and then they have Union Berlin at home. So then you make it 4 out of 5 against really difficult opponents. Because Schalke, yes, a relegation candidate, but the Revier Derby is different. I was at the Revier Derby in Dortmund for the return, and it took them a full, I think it was in the 80th minute or something like that they finally scored, and the match only ended 1-0 for Dortmund, right? Because the Revier Derby is just so very difficult. And we just talked in great length how Schalke have become increasingly defensive sound. They are the sort of team that would give them trouble. And then, of course, Bayern, Leipzig, and Union Berlin, you know. And then I think if they get through that spell and it's still close, or maybe even, or they are ahead because they beat Bayern Munich, then it's for real.
What role could the Champions League play in that one? Obviously, they've got the 1-0 lead heading into the second leg at Chelsea. Is this a sort of, like, as silly as it may sound, is this positive either way? Like, if they win, then they've beaten Chelsea, they're on to the next round of the Champions League. If they lose, then it would be, I think, a dramatic turnaround. But at the same time, it just means they can focus on the domestic campaign that much more. Or can you see a scenario in which losing to Chelsea starts a bit of a skid for Dortmund?
Yeah, I think it's the second. I think in the past we would have said, okay, well, maybe Dortmund should just go out there and focus on the league. But there's been too many times where when they had a negative result, they would kind of start spiraling, right? So I think for them, the best thing is just to keep winning. It doesn't matter who you face, whether it's in the cup, whether it's in the Champions League, whether it's in the Bundesliga, just keep winning. Because I think they're finally at a stage where they haven't been in a long time, where they just, no matter who they're playing, they feel like they can win the game. And the Chelsea result was a perfect example. Chelsea were desperate at the Westfalenstadion, right, to get something out of it because of the situation that Graham Potter is in. And I think that Dortmund handled that match perfectly. You know, they said to Chelsea, here's the ball, do your thing. And the one opportunity that they got, they completed and made it 1-0. And, you know, the bookies have them as favorites to go through, which makes sense. They had them as favorites even ahead of the tie before they won 1-0 in Dortmund, right? So I think for them, I think it's just about keeping this momentum going. And yeah, it means more games, sure. But at the same time, I think they're almost at a stage now where it's best for them to just keep playing more games. And their depth and the squad depth is really good at the moment too. You look at now that Sebastian Haller is back, right? And what a story he has been. Mm-hmm. But you all of a sudden, Terzic is in a situation that a Dortmund coach hasn't been in a while where, oh, this first team isn't working. I'm just going to throw on Marlon. I'm going to throw on Royce. I'm going to throw on Gio Reyna. We're going to have depth in our squad now. And I think that it makes them an extremely dangerous side. But I think those next 5 games in the Bundesliga plus the Chelsea fixture, so that's 6 games, that's going to be extremely interesting to watch. And I think it's going to determine a lot on where the Bundesliga title race is going as well, right? Although having said that, if Leipzig win, and Leipzig have been the best team in the league since Marco Rose has taken over, right? They are still very much in this as well. And so I think, yeah, for Dortmund, this is weeks of truth. But, you know, I think one bad result doesn't necessarily mean it's over. I think it's really about where they're at after that stretch.
Manuel, what was it that made Julian Brandt wake up and remember that he was good at football this season? That's been a bit of a head scratcher for me. He's the top scorer for Dortmund. I think he's second or joint second in assists. He's consistently one of their most top rated players. But he's a guy who this time last season, I thought, was just one of those players that they spent a lot of money on, didn't quite come good, wasn't terrible, was a squad player, and then off he goes to a maybe mid-table Bundesliga club. And here we are with Julian Brandt back in there being one of their most critical players. I don't really understand how we got here.
Yeah, no, I think that's been a head scratcher for a lot of people. Although Stefan and I actually did a podcast in the first half of the season where we really heavily criticized him for what he has done with his career. And I'm just looking at his age now, 26. And what I said at the time was that Julian Brandt reminds me a ton of Bastian Schweinsteiger. And we all now remember Bastian Schweinsteiger, the World Cup winning player with Germany. And then, of course, he did it with the Chicago Fire as well, right?
Oh, yes, of course. He won the World Cup with the Fire. Yes. Yeah, who could forget? That poor journalist. I feel so bad for that person.
We'll never forget. But anyways, we made the point that actually I thought, okay, so, you know, for a long time until, you know, pretty much his mid-20s, Bastian Schweinsteiger was this uncompleted talent who never really got going. He didn't have a full position. He was played as a winger at times, right? And it wasn't until Louis van Gaal basically put him in that number 8 role, 6-8 role, that he became the player he ultimately would retire as, right? A World Cup winning player, a legend for Germany, a legend for Bayern Munich, a player that had won everything there is to win. And I made the point at the time that Julian Brandt needs a Louis van Gaal equivalent at Borussia Dortmund, someone who just puts him in a role where he's not only his for the best of his ability, but also where he is forced to sort of take some responsibility. And it looks like Aiden Terzic did just that. You know, he said to him, like, look, you're going to be an important player for me. I'm going to play you in a more important role. You know, not necessarily as a full winger, but as one of those three players in midfield where you can roam a little bit. And it's done wonders. I think that's really what it's come down to. I think it's giving him, rather than saying, oh, you can't take the responsibility, we're going to kind of put you there and here, and yeah, maybe one day you're going to grow up, and say, like, here's the responsibility. There it is. You know, you know, you have to actually take an important role because we're making you. And I think he's just fully embraced that. And you see it. I mean, he's been outstanding. His numbers have been incredible. And I think, too, he's become one of Dortmund's most important players. But he's not the only one. Like, we said for years, what's happened to Emre Can? Mm-hmm. And Emre Can has been playing an incredible, in that 9-game stretch, including the game against Chelsea, he has played incredibly well. He's almost looks like the guy he was at Liverpool. And that's a long time ago now, right? But yeah, Emre Can has been incredible as well. And so you gotta give credit to Terzic that he's sort of resurrected those two guys.
Two more players I wanted to ask about for Dortmund. You mentioned one already. That would be Gio Reyna, mm-hmm. who, when the season resumes, he 3 goals in his first 3 games, all of those substitute appearances.
Yeah.
But since then, I think only 2 more appearances. One of them a start, but he's getting very limited minutes. Mm-hmm. I think lots of conspiratorial brains connected to what happened with the U.S. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but I would love to know if you have thoughts on why we aren't seeing as much Gio Reyna, or why we haven't seen as much of him lately.
Yeah, no, I don't pay any attention to this conspiratorial stuff. I think this is just a team that has found a formation that works, and I think Eden Terzic is just happy to have ace up his sleeve that he can bring on as an impact substitution. I mean, Gio is not the only one, right? Who sort of has to buy this time. Donny Malen is out there as well, who comes off the bench quite often. I think Terzic just found a formation that he likes, and he's using that. And at the moment, Gio Reyna is looking in the from the outside in. But it's not just, you know, I mentioned there's certain players that are looking in from the outside. Even Marco Reus has been rotated in and out. And that has been a huge discussion point at times. But I just think that Eden Terzic is very much aware that he needs to have players that can come off the bench and sort of be impactful. Remember, Marco Reus didn't even come off the bench against Chelsea because Terzic didn't think it was the right move to make, right? So I wouldn't pay any attention to it. I think at the moment, Dortmund are in a situation where they're fighting at all fronts. They have a realistic chance of winning not just a title, but the Bundesliga title. And I think the personal situation of players is just secondary at the moment. And that includes everyone, whether it's a Mats Hummels, a Marco Reus, you know, all these players, if they don't fit into a certain tactical situation at that moment, they are watching from the outside in.
Do you get the sense, though, that the locker room is pretty united behind Terzic?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting that we try to talk a lot of things into the Marco Reus situation, right? And it is an interesting situation because, like, his contract is expiring in the summer, and we don't know whether he's going to renew or not. Although I've been told that his personal trend is towards him signing a new contract. But Dortmund want to pay a lot less money, right? Because he's getting older and he's the top earner there. And they're trying to sort of earmark a lot of that money to offer Bellingham a huge contract to sort of persuade him to maybe stay a little longer. So they need to scratch together some cash. Having said all that, Reus is willing to, you know, has been pretty quiet about it. You know, these rumblings that have been going, that could be way louder, have been sort of subdued. And the same is true of Mats Hummels, right? Is another one who's been mostly on the bench, but hasn't really said much about it. And so I think the dressing room is quite united. Put this as an equivalent, like this would be the equivalent of like Thomas Müller and Joshua Kimmich being constantly on the bench, right?
Yeah.
This would be kind of the equivalent. And the noise would be a lot louder, but it's not. And that tells me that Terzic has that dressing room united.
I'm assuming he will keep it united if he's able to keep Jude Bellingham around. You mentioned him. That was the other player I wanted to ask you about. Because if you read any sort of paper, any sort of coverage from the British perspective, it's a foregone conclusion. He's going to be in England or in the Premier League next season, maybe in Serie A, something like that. For you, Manuel, do you think it's a foregone conclusion? Do you think that he will be gone no matter what, as long as everybody meets the 150 million euro price tag or whatever it is? Or do you think there is a scenario in which he sticks around?
Kiel has said that he will try everything to sign him to a new contract. Let's see if he can get it done. That tells me that it's not a foregone conclusion at all. Look, we have this every year.
We do.
Every single year.
Every year.
Every year we do have it. And usually those players do leave, but it usually takes longer than everyone anticipated. Remember when Erling Haaland was for sure gone after his first year at Dortmund? And he didn't go. He went the year later. Remember when Sancho was 100% going to Man United? The British press even sent some poor guy to Dortmund to cover it there. They were like, what are you doing here? Like, the deadline passed like a month ago. Dortmund will tell everyone that there will be a certain date in August where they can sign Jude Bellingham to. And if that date is passed, it's not going to happen. Right? And you can...
whatever that date is, Manchester United will put it
in. Or they might even sign
him
to a new contract and then it won't happen at all. And then Sky and BT and all these other dudes, they can send all the press they want to Dortmund and hang out at, I don't know, what's a good place? The Rote Erde Stadion Bar, and hope that someone will tell him something, because we have that. Or someone will go in and pay 150 million euros before Dortmund's deadline, and Jude Bellingham will go to that specific club. Everything else, like this, everything I'm reading right now is speculation, because no one knows. Mm-hmm. No one knows. You can't tell me that anyone knows. I know that Dortmund are optimistic that they have a chance of giving him a contract offer that he might accept. That's what I know, because that's what I've been told. Whether Bellingham will accept that offer, we don't know. And people will say the Bellingham camp thinks this, the Bellingham camp believes that this is the best club for him and all that kind of stuff. No, that stuff isn't out there.
I'm sort of convinced, strange as it may be, that winning the Champions League and then like losing the title to Bayern by like 1 point is the best scenario for keeping Bellingham, because then he wins some silverware. It's a big moment, but also it's like they ran him close. Maybe next year's the year. Whereas if they win the title, there's a part of me that wonders if he's like, okay, mission accomplished. We beat Bayern. I can move now. Life is good.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very good point. I've thought that too. If he wins the Bundesliga title this year, then what else is there for him to do?
Well, if he does move on, that's probably for the best for RB Leipzig, who are still also in that title race, but would probably love for a key midfielder for an opponent to no longer be around. Yeah. I'm equally confused by their season as I am by some of the other seasons and the other players we've talked about, because it's been one where they bring in Timo Werner during the summer. There's been changes. They've sold players. They've agreed to sell players this coming summer. Christopher Nkunku is already gone. And is it Leimer or is it Halstenberg?
Nkunku is not announced yet.
Oh, who, Nkunku?
It's not announced yet.
Is it not official? Is it like unofficially official though?
Oh, yeah.
I guess, like, do you think this will be another year in which Leipzig are also sort of stripped of some key parts, starting with Nkunku and then maybe losing a couple other ones in there? Gvardiol, I'm assuming, will be the source of many, many, many rumors this summer.
But you can disregard all summer rumors. Gvardiol isn't going nowhere in the summer.
You think?
I know.
All right. Well, that's good for Leipzig fans, the many that there are. So do you think we're going to get basically the same team back then with Marco Rosa in charge? And it just seems like this is kind of building the foundation for next season.
So Nkunku will probably be gone to Chelsea. I mean, from what I've been told, that deal is done. It's just not announced. Konrad Leimer is going to join Bayern Munich on a free transfer. Again, that's not announced, but it's an open secret. Leipzig have signed. They have this other club in Salzburg. You may have heard of them.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, yeah. So they signed Nicolas Seiwald from them. was really good. He's going to replace Lima. And they also signed Benjamin Cesco, who's been linked to all sorts of English clubs. I recently actually saw someone say, oh, he's going to Man United. I'm like, they already announced him to go to Leipzig. Like last summer. And I think that Timo Werner is the replacement for Nkunku.
Makes sense. So it seems like we'll get kind of more stability than I would have expected there. What does that all mean for Caden Clark, if anything? Do you think we start seeing him get more minutes more consistently?
So people keep pestering me about it, so I just asked.
I asked
the club, and they said that they're quite happy with him, and they'll see how it goes, and they're giving him the time to get adjusted and sort of recover from what wasn't an easy situation for him at New York, where he, I think, frequently clashed with Gerhard Struber, right? The head coach. I think that's known, right? People know this. Yeah. Okay. People don't know. I think they're just going to give him the time. They still believe in him. If there is an opportunity to send him out on loan, they might do that. But for now, they kind of want to keep him around. And I think he's made the bench already a couple of times. So yeah, I think. With Caden Clark, he will be given all the opportunities out, to be successful there.
And then there's a few other clubs we obviously haven't had time to discuss. Leverkusen, not in the top five, which is my joke about Leverkusen. They're always somewhere in the top five. This time they're bucking that by being at 11th.
Yeah.
Gladbach in 10th, Bremen in 9th. Any other teams that you feel like we should spend some time discussing? Frankfurt, I heard you talking about as being a club that maybe getting knocked out of the Champions League wouldn't. Yeah. Be the worst thing because it lets them just focus on finishing in the top four or the top five or six if they just want to be in Europe, period. They would obviously have to jump Freiburg to make that happen. Freiburg currently in 5th. Either of those clubs you feel like are particularly compelling when it comes to the narrative for the rest of the season?
I really want Frankfurt to finish in the top four again because I think they're a sleeping giant and they're doing some really interesting things. I mean, obviously, they going to lose Kamada to Dortmund, but today, the reports are out that they are going to sign, oh my God, I'm going to butcher this name. So I apologize to all my audio French speaking listeners. Aoua from Olympique Lyon. Is that how you pronounce it?
Aoua.
Aoua? Is
that
it?
I have no idea. I think that's what he is in FIFA. So that's what I go with.
Okay. Anyways, that's apparently
it,
done.
Is it one consonant and the rest are vowels in his name?
It's A-O-U-A-R. Yes, you're right.
Okay. Aoua. I think it is.
Aoua. Yeah, Aoua. Linked with tons of clubs in the Premier League over the years, right? And yeah, Frankfurt done. Done deal. Signed. So that's the Kamada replacement.
That feels like a really good signing. I feel like Aoua, in the times that I've seen him, has always been really interesting, and I'm always surprised that he stays where he has stayed. So that move.
It's a Frankfurt signing.
Yeah.
They are really very good at business, and they've getting increasingly better. I mean, they signed Kolo Muani on a free transfer.
Did they really?
They did. And they're going to get 100 million euros for him.
Why are German clubs so good at that? Bayern Munich is obviously the main one. Why are German clubs so good at the free transfer?
It's, they're just extremely good at scouting. And you and I have been to Frankfurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the club is on really good footing. Markus Krösche is probably one of the most exciting sporting directors around. And he's really good at signing players, which is, of course, you American listeners out there would love that because he was also the one who went after Paxton Aaronson, right? So he does know what he's doing and they have certain targets in mind. And of course, Aoua is the one that is going to replace Kamada, but they also sort of, Paxton Aaronson was signed, with knowing that there is going to be always a couple players leaving every year. So they always try to have someone already in hand, ready for someone and sort of player leaves. But it's just like some of the stuff that they do is so smart. Like Mario Götze, the way he has blossomed now at Frankfurt has just been outstanding. He leads the league. I looked this up the other day. He leads the league in kilometers run, which is just an incredible stat considering where he was at when he left Dortmund, right? He was physically not in a good place. He was extremely sick the year before. And he's completely recovered during his time at Eindhoven, and he leads the league in kilometers covered, but he also leads the league in smart passes played. You know, he's I think because he's now finally at age 30 at a place where he's a physical peak, he can play the sort of style of football that we always wanted him to play, right? And but for Frankfurt to go in and say, okay, well, at PSV for 2 years, he's finally gotten to a place where he's mentally and physically in peak condition, he will help us. And then they pick him up for like €3-4 million. And he's one of the best players in the league now. You know, that's the sort of thinking where they're like, this guy will make us instantly better. And take a chance on it, and it works.
If you had to guess, I don't know if you know off the top of your head, I'll Google it while I ask you. Who is Frankfurt's record transfer? What is their record outlay?
Their record signing.
Ah, I have it for you.
Filip Kostic?
He does not appear to be in the top four, according to this website you may have heard of called Transfermarkt.
Okay, so the top signing of all time.
The Kostic one is confusing because they have the top signing being 22 million euros. You have the top signing being 22 million euros, and the next closest would be 10 million euros.
I have to try to think. Who did they spend that much money
on? Luka Jovic, supposedly.
Oh, yes.
But still, that is not... The record signings being 22 million and then 10 million and 10 million really does tell you how good they are at the business, which makes sense though, right? Because is Frankfurt like the financial hub of Germany, or am I making that up?
No, it is the financial hub of Germany, but funnily enough, for the longest time of their existence, they were the financial basket case of Germany, the club that is.
So they've turned it around then?
They've realized
who they are?
Yeah, and that's Freddy Bobic's work, who's of course recently got fired by Hertha, but he's laid the foundation for what they are today, together with Adi Hütter, and now of course it's Markus Krösche and Oliver Glasner, and I think Glasner might actually be the best head coach in German football at the moment. What he's been doing there is just fantastic. They're running out a little bit out of steam. I mean, I mentioned that on the podcast, right, on Monday. I think that them game going out of the Champions League might actually be a good thing for them at this stage. Sort of last year they won the Europa League, but they completely by foregoing the Bundesliga completely, right? They finished somewhere in the middle there. But they sort of said, okay, we'll have a real chance of winning the Europa League. Let's just go for it. And it meant that all the other competitions, they fell completely off. They were never going to win the Champions League, right? So to get back into the Champions League, they have to finish top four. And I think they're getting now to that point where they have to make some tough decisions and say, okay, well, you know, Napoli, that's done. We lost 2-0 at home. We're not coming back. Kolomoani suspended for the return. Let's just go all in for the Bundesliga. And I think you will see soon where they're going to shift towards that.
Oliver Glasner is such a strong manager that he's made the English press pay attention to the Bundesliga, because I saw my first story today about how he would be a
Chelsea.
Great replacement for, yeah, Graham Potter.
Yeah. Good luck. No one is going to take over that dumpster fire of a club. I'm sorry.
I feel like it. I mean, Jesse Marsch is available. They can go for Jesse Marsch. Why not? Unless Leipzig want him back. I doubt that's going to be the case. Well, Manuel, thank you so much for talking about many of the clubs we talked about. We didn't get to everybody, but I think that's okay. I had questions about Gladbach and Marcus Thuram and how quickly he will end up signing for Bayern Munich. I don't know if that will happen. But if it does, we will have you back to talk more Bundesliga. We'll have you back before the end of the season as we get closer to like the run-in for the Bundesliga. I promise it won't be another 6 months.
Yeah, that'd be good. Has it been 6 months?
I don't know. Time is meaningless, but I feel like it's been since around the start of the season, would be my guess.
Yeah, I think we did talk like maybe in September or October. Yeah.
The World Cup really threw things off, because I think normally we would have had a conversation around December. That's a good kind of stopping point, taking stock of the Bundesliga, but when you have a World Cup thrown right in there, it kind of complicates matters a little bit.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah,
let's go back to it in about 6-7 weeks when we've seen this Dortmund run, and then we can take stock again.
I like this plan. My final question for you, we haven't talked to you, I guess, since the World Cup. So How was the World Cup for you, Manuel?
What happened?
Canada, Germany, doing fun things for you.
Yeah, no, it's like, let's just pretend that never happened.
Fair enough. The Euros are right around the corner.
By the way. Germany hosts the Euros.
Yeah, with Jurgen Klopp in charge, so I heard.
No, I think that tournament will be Hansi Flick's.
And then Hansi Klopp, Jurgen Klopp for 2026?
I mean, Flick is going to win the Euros. That's a good place to step down, right?
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Then he can take over Chelsea. There we go. We solved it. Well, Manuel Vaid, thank you so much. One more time. How can people find you? How can people hear more from you?
Yeah, so people can find me on Twitter at Manuel Vaid. Then, of course, I work for Transfermarkt. I do also do write about 10 columns a month for Forbes on German football. And then, of course, the Gegenpressing podcast. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, wherever else you listen to your podcasts. And then, of course, on Substack, just Gegenpressing newsletter. You get, if you do sign up, it's $6 a month. You get you 2 podcasts behind the paywall. You get the other 2 podcasts without advertising. And you get 2 newsletters, one from me, one from Stefan. So Stefan's are worth reading, that's for sure. And then the additional content that we come up with here and there, which is not promised, but we do provide at times. So yeah, you can find that at the Gegenpressing newsletter on Substack. I guess, is it at Gegenpressing newsletter if you look at Substack? I'm not sure. I think there's a search function. You can find us.
There we go. Use the search function, find them, subscribe. It is wonderful. Manuel is wonderful as always. Thank you again, Manuel, for taking the time.
No, thanks for having me on. It's been great. And as we said, way too long.
Of course. 6 weeks, 7 weeks from now, we'll see how Dortmund are doing. Until then, listeners, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers.